Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today. Oh, it's great to be back in the great state of Utah yet again. Our friend Paul Charchian joins us today on the ZabeCast. Charch, a giant, deep, sincere Japanese bow from me to you for coming to Zabe Vegas and being so well received by my listeners. Bro, you were great. Thank you, my friend.
That was a lot of fun. Oh, your listeners are great. I mean, the two highlights for me were a round of golf and then just talking to everybody and hearing their stories. You know, unlike what I think when most people think of your listeners, they think of guys with like an IQ of 76 and, you know,
mouth-breathing dude bros.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. No, these were great dudes who I love talking to, and Zabe, you know, a number of great conversations, shocking number of people. And maybe it's just because of the demo of your listenership, a shocking number of people that are considering leaving wherever they live now
to go somewhere warm or somewhere more hospitable to their lifestyle and beliefs.
Well, a lot of times that's both, right? At the same time.
Yeah, a lot of times it is both.
Yeah, a lot of times both. And then had just a fascinating, probably half hour long conversation with Kent from the Bay Area talking about
Portu, who used to work for Tesla.
9 years at Tesla, including he worked basically the I don't want to call him assembly line, because he was in charge of the underbody of every Tesla, including Tesla number one that rolled off the line. He was there for 9 years.
That's incredible.
He built the underside on the first, you know, several hundred thousand or million Teslas, and eventually worked his way up the ranks to the point where he was, and he came in at a pretty high level anyway, but by the end, he was running the Tesla Model S, which was the very first one.
Yep.
The model, it was the S, then the X, then the 3, then the Y, and he owned and was running all four of those.
Wow.
Eventually.
So why did he leave?
What a great story.
Did he retire? Did he get fired?
He did retire.
Oh, he did?
He retired. Good. Yeah. Now, imagine you got in on day one of Tesla stock,
I hope Kent made a nice little cha-ching on that.
Of course. He did. Good. Here's the great story, and Kent did a great job telling it. The engineers got to have a Tesla, the 85th car to come off the line was for the engineers to take home and use on a rotating basis between the engineers.
Wow.
And when he got car 85 off the line and brought it back home to his wife and drove his parents around, he was just stunned. He's like, this thing's going to be a huge hit. Cashed in, liquidated every asset he had.
And bought all the stock
and bought all the Tesla stock he could.
Wow. Good for him.
What a great story. Yep. What a great story. And, like, you get just so wowed. You're like, oh my God, this is a total needle mover. This is something that, you know, is going to be a huge hit. It's not yet. And I'm going all in. What a cool story. The closest thing I know to that, Zabe, I'm sorry for all these long-winded discussions.
No.
I got a buddy who bought the AirPod number one. you know, like the first AirPod, not the first one they made, but right when it came out, he was a huge Apple guy. He was using Macs and
these are the first wireless earbuds that people mocked, going, "Oh, they're going to fall out of your ear and one bounce into the sewer."
I'm talking about the Air, the iPod, the music player.
Oh, you're talking about the player. You called it an AirPod, and I need to be specific.
I misspoke. The iPod music player.
Okay, the original iPod, which if you had one in mint condition, unwrapped, it'd be worth a lot of money, I guess.
It would be worth a lot of money right now. But he was like, this thing's going to change music. This is the only way I want to listen to music now is with this in my pocket. And so he went out and bought a bunch of Apple stock. So this is, you know, whatever it was, 17 years ago or something. And he, this is before the iPhone. And so he did really well in that too. But I love to hear stories of people that just get, you get blown away by something that you believe is going to be huge. And you just, you go all in. That's so great.
Yeah. Now my listeners are all great people, interesting stories. Very thankful that they listen to my rantings and get some enjoyment out of that. And are willing to come out with, you know, no guarantee of how it's going to be to hang out with me and you and others. And I gotta be honest that, you know, some of my best guys, they weren't even there. Like there's some even better guys, like, you know, surgeons and doctors and high end lawyers and, you know, hedge fund guys. Like I got even better guys that are too important to come out, but they are big fans of mine and of yours as well, because everyone who's in the family gets to be in the family. Now I got to ask you, what did you think of Mr. X?
Well, I had met Mr. X face to face.
What did you think of him in his element being treated like a demigod because he's Mr. Gambling? So everyone was coming up and sniffing his farts going, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Him teaching his craps class. I mean, Mr. X was like so happy the whole 4 days there.
He was. For a guy who doesn't go to Vegas that often, I've now seen him twice in Vegas in 3 months.
Well, and he's getting back on the train for sure. Yeah.
He loves it. I mean, I think he likes having the audience, and I think he loved
he loves the audience tutorial more
than anything else.
Yeah, he loves, he says, I'm a teacher. But he also breaks his own rules when it comes to gambling with the excuse of, I'm a better teacher than I'm a student. I often break my own rules. Also, it needs to be noted in that photo I took with the four of us, me, you, Armin, and Mr. X, the size of Mr. X's head next to Armin's head needs to be seen to be believed. It's unreal. He has a giant head. He's a big fella, big unit. But anyway, great time. And yeah. Speaking of stock, you know that Apple just celebrated its 50th anniversary. And Darren Revelle was sort of doing some nostalgia on, you know, the stock 50 years ago and what it'd be worth now. There's a number of people that helped out Jobs early on, founding Apple, that for whatever reason got out pretty early in the process and they got nothing. And Darren was kind of saying, you know, they should have flipped these guys a bone, including the guy that hand-delivered the computers to Jobs in the garage when they were first working on, you know, what would become, you know, the Apple Macintosh. Other people were like, hey, since they didn't take great financial risk, they get no great financial reward. That's just how life works. Where do you stand?
I'm on the side that says if these people helped you, and just because they didn't paper it up, if they helped you and you've got, you know, billions of shares of stock, man, throw some around. But Jobs was notorious about Jobs was a dick.
Oh,
he was notorious for stealing other people's ideas and work, crediting as his own. He was a visionary, but he was an asshole. He drove brilliant people out of Apple. They'd have to lure them back to work later with promises that they'd never have to interface with Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
And Jobs, you know, Wozniak was the real brains behind Apple at the beginning. Jobs just, he was never more than a marketer. That's it. He was a guy who looked really, really snappy in a black turtleneck.
I think you're selling him short. I think Jobs had the artistic vision of these devices have to be so intuitive, they don't need a lot of buttons, that you pick it up and you can all instantly figure out, okay, it does this. All right, cool. I think he was the driving force behind that. And that's a big part.
I will grant you that. Now, he was very good at simplify. That was, and I think that's smart. Elon Musk, same thing. He's always simplifying everything.
Yeah.
So I think there was something to that. What was the last great Apple innovation?
Certainly not the Apple Vision Pro, their VR goggles. Although, did you talk to Zabe Vegas attendee Chris Coletti from Austin, Texas?
So.
I can't believe I didn't hook you up with him. Chris Coletti was on the M1 chip team for Apple.
Really?
Yep. Went to school at Madison. And he reached out to me when I was almost going to buy the first non-M1 MacBook. And he's like, you need to hold off. Hold off. Like, we got a new chip coming out. It's going to be way better. And I was like, vaguely remembered that. Well, he went from that to their now what he calls immersive video division. And he said, you need to talk about this more on the podcast, Zabe. I go, well, I don't know. It's not going anywhere. You know, MetaQuest just basically announced that that thing's dead-ended right now. Your Apple Vision unit, you have to have a battery strapped to your leg that weighs 5 pounds and a cable. And he goes, listen, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. So I can't believe I didn't hook you up with him. I'm very sad that I didn't get to talk to Kent because my Tesla continues to overjoy me and surprise me over a year later, which no car has ever done. Me famously of the, I'm bored of this. Let me sell it or trade it in and get something new.
Yes,
I really wish I'd talked to Kent, but I talked to Chris for a little while. And he says that there are immersive video applications for a lighter weight, more self-powered Apple Vision goggles with immersive audio that will blow you away, he said. Like watching a ball game as if you're in the front row, and yet you're also getting the crowd mix as well as the announcers all blended together. He says it's going to be amazing. So we'll see. But the last great thing that Apple made, I don't know. Like,
it was the phone. Zabe, that was 2007.
Right. So, and they're working hard.
We're 20 years away from Apple really producing a visionary product.
What is there to make?
Well, people would have said that before the iPhone, right?
Well, Jobs anticipated that people would want something like this, and it was possible. That's why he was able to get to that space before anyone else did.
Yes. So who's the visionary now? Because it's not Tim Cook, apparently, right?
Because
Tim Cook's had a decade at the helm, and
Cookie
we
stinks.
Have no great product to show for.
How about this? They rolled out a new Apple Neo laptop. Have you heard this?
Yeah.
And it's very cheap. It's like a MacBook Air, but it has a crackable cover so you can get in, replace things, upgrade RAM on your own. Apple, Mac and Apple computers famously had never, you couldn't really get into them. And they're doing this in part because the European Union mandated it, saying that you can't sell products that have batteries that end up dying and then you just got to throw the whole thing away. It's like the European Union has, I think it's called what is called a right to repair law.
U.S. should have that too.
Well,
you should be able to repair your own product.
Right. But somebody else said this is proof that Apple has truly met the end of the road in terms of innovation, because if all they're doing is rebooting the MacBook Air, brilliant machine, by the way, and I've got one, and incredibly pound for pound, cost for cost, dollar for dollar, an amazing laptop. Super light, battery lasts forever. It's great. If this is what they're doing, they've got nothing to innovate. But I would say, but look at all the great shit we have already. It's hard to innovate. What more do you want?
It is, but somebody's doing it right now, and it's not Apple, even with all the resources they've got. You'll remember, by the way, the EU is what made Apple go to the standard USB-C connector instead of the proprietary shitty
lightning
connector.
Exactly.
Oh, I hate proprietary cables. Sony talking to you, Apple.
If it wasn't for the EU on that USB-C thing, who knows what new shitty proprietary Apple only adapter we'd all have to buy with dongles and everything else. Woof.
Correct.
Here, I want to show you this real quick. So this, Darren Revelle tweeted this. As Apple turns 50 today, its place in Forrest Gump is always an interesting one, because Forrest Gump purportedly bought stock in the company and got a letter from Apple with the logo, the famous rainbow-colored Apple, right there. And Ravel says, as a prop, it's horrendously bad. He didn't elaborate. Dated 1975, it has markings of 1977, rainbow logo in Cupertino, and it mentions Lisa, which is from 1983. So it's a little bit all over the place, but still. Nerds!
Yes. Do you remember the Apple Lisa?
Vaguely.
It had a graphical user interface. I'm trying to remember if it was before, I believe this was before the Mac. And it had, but the big deal was it had the graphical user interface that the Mac would eventually have. And if I've got the timeline correct, it was after the Apple III.
Okay.
And before Mac, and it bombed. It was a total failure for them.
Here it is.
It was an engineering masterpiece.
Look at this. Look at this thing. A tiny little square monochrome screen. A double stacked floppy, 5.5-inch floppy, two of them on the side, a little square mouse. And it only cost $9,995 in 1983.
Ouch. Ouch, Zabe. That hurts. And so that puts it, it was before the Mac. You would have thought that could have killed the company. And, Apple's been on life. It was on life support for much of the 80s and early 90s.
Under Scully. Who was the CEO? Scully came over from Pepsi. John Scully. Yeah.
It's so dumb that these companies go
hire a non-executives. Yeah.
Right. Any executive that knows nothing about your business, like as you and I have, as I have complained on your show before, Xbox just hire somebody who's not a gamer, has no background in gaming whatsoever.
Yeah.
You see companies do, and the person before that came from T-Mobile and had no business in gaming and ran it into the ground. Duh.
Bro,
I hate it when companies
do. I've spent my whole career in radio. You don't think I've seen people airdropped in to high positions of management
so many times
who had no fucking idea what made radio work or not work?
Oh, but they listened to radio, Zabe, so they knew.
Oh, sure.
They listened.
Yeah, and then they spin it as a virtue. Well, I think it's good to have a fresh angle. I'm going to apply some other, business techniques to help your struggling industry evolve into the next phase. Okay, but do you know why people listen to the radio? Do you know what makes sense, why it matters to them? What is it all about exactly? Well, it's about this and that and metric this, metric that. It's like, no, you don't get fucking radio, but whatever. All right, let's move on. Topic number two, the Shield is on the march. It has been, for those who are paying attention, a breathtaking couple of months now for the NFL. As the Players Association is in utter disarray and the owners are pushing for an 18-game schedule for more money. It has been one story after another. Every owner now in every interview is talking about, I think 18 games would be great. And they use similar but different language. Carly Ursay of the Colts says it would make the product better. Didn't elaborate. No. Jerry Jones said it would be an effective way for the players to further leverage their careers without too much exposure. At least that's his theory on that. Others say that the fans want it, even though no one's ever shown any polling that says that we're actually clamoring for that. And the push to get to 18 is going to be pretty relentless. When will they get there? Who knows? We know this, Charge. The Super Bowl in 2028 doesn't have a date yet.
Yeah, because it's going to be mid-February in all probability.
Right.
I hate the 18-game schedule. I didn't like the 17-game schedule. If it were up to me, I'd be back at 16 games.
I would too. And if they go to 18 games, they're going to need two buys. And two buys.
They're going to need two buys. That's right. They will need two buys. So they're going to extend the season by two more weeks.
Yep.
Now, part of it is I don't want to work two more weeks. It's already a long season. So for me, selfishly,
now we know why.
That's right. That is a little bit of it. But also, what the NFL does better than hockey, baseball, basketball, well, they do a lot of things better, but one of them is they build up a desire for the game. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. We get away from football. We have a long offseason that these other sports do not have. And these other games have got, the other sports have got so many games that none of them have the intensity. They're not as special. You know, when you've got, when you start diluting the product to the level the NFL already has and will continue to do, they are, in my opinion, they are only looking at short side P&L. They are not looking at, you're going, okay, if we erase one, when we break even preseason game and we add in a $5 million, you know, regular season game, that's great for us. I don't think they're factoring in very important intangibles, like there is such a thing as too many games. There is a lot, all the momentum for a season that people can't wait for to start because it's been 6 months between games.
Yeah.
They're discounting all of that. I hate it.
They are discounting it, and I am sad to say I believe they are right to discount it. I am sad to say that if I had to bet on who's correct, it's the owners. There are enough hoopleheads that say more football, I'll take it. Sorry that's going to mean more work for you, but it's just the way it is. It won't be a better product at all. Two bye weeks, which was tried back in 1993, 1 year and done, you may remember it, sucked because there was 2 weeks that you're like, shit, my team's not playing. And that's no fun. And it screwed up fantasy because you're like, I got to navigate two bye weeks now? Fuck that. And as pointed out yesterday here on the pod, it also meant 2 weekends your wife could go schedule you for some dumb shit. Apple picking, pumpkin patch, antiquing. Girlfriend's wedding, like, you know, it's just, it's, no one benefits from two bye weeks. But here was Jerry Jones, and you know, you count on Jerry for a quirky, kitschy metaphor. Here's what he said about the demand for more games.
No, when the ducks quack, feed them, and we have that demand.
When the ducks quack, feed them. Quack, quack, quack.
When the ducks quack, feed them.
I don't even know if that's true. Charge. I think ducks quack when they're just walking out of their hutch down to the water. They quack when they're happy. They quack when they're sad. That's what they do. They quack.
I don't know that they quack when they're hungry. Maybe that's, I don't, yeah. Why do ducks quack? But Jerry Jones seems to know a lot about, feeding the ducks, if you know what I mean, babe.
Feeding the ducks. Here, let's fact check this in real time. You ready?
Yeah.
Going to Grok here.
Why do ducks quack?
Do ducks quack when they are hungry? Let's just see what good old Gronk has to say, searching the web. Yes, ducks often quack when they are hungry, especially domestic ones or those habituated to people. Ducks are highly vocal animals. Okay, they use a variety of sounds to communicate, and quacking, particularly loud, rapid, or excited quacks, frequently signals food excitement, begging for food, or anticipation of feeding time.
You're about 90 words per minute. That was some nice typing right there. And no backspace.
Really?
No typo. Well done.
Well, I've not tested myself on my typing. Do you
Mavis type? Beacon would be very disappointed in you.
Do you touch type without looking, or are you a hunt and pecker?
Oh yeah, touch type. God, okay. Yes.
When did you learn to touch type?
High school. Ultimately, the most useful class I took in high school
right,
was typing.
Yeah.
I mean, use it every day. Is there, you know, what other class did you ever take in school that you get more day-to-day usage out of than the typing class? It was absolutely critical.
Right. That's interesting that you were admiring my touch typing. I taught myself to touch type shortly out of college, when I realized that it was a skill that I probably should have. And I bought a book when I was 24 years old in Northbrook, Illinois, and like went through the drills teaching you how to do this stuff. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. You went through. So I
taught myself how to type through the book. So
no way. So there was a,
how can you tell how fast I am typing? That was a short little burst, and I did screw up once because I'm under pressure.
You're at least 90 words per minute. You're really, really? Good at it.
Okay.
Really good at it. Well, I'm sure there are websites that will test it for you. There was you remember the old arcade game called House of the Dead, and it had the guns, the plastic guns, and you were shooting zombies left and right. Do you remember House of the Dead?
No, but I'm sure you do.
Yes, and some of our listeners will as well. They came out eventually with Typing of the Dead, and it was the same game, and it was on the same rail, same path and everything, but you typed your way through the dead. Oh, it was great. Here's your typing test right here. All right, let's see what you got, Dave. I'm putting you at 90.
Stumbling here. This website's weird. God damn it.
If you make it. So what listeners can't tell is when you make a mistake, it doesn't let you pass by it. It stops you on that letter until you get that letter. So you can't just own the mistake and keep going, which is not cool. You have 26 seconds left in your typing.
This is really great radio, by the way. People are like, I am turning this podcast off. All right. I don't know how fast that is.
Well, you're 13 seconds away now. You may as well finish it out.
Don't throw these weird things at me like hyphens. God damn it.
Yeah, that's not fair. No numbers, though, which is handy of them. They won't tell you your score unless you sign up.
23 words per minute with 86% accuracy.
This is a bad typing test. That's a bad typing test.
Apparently, maybe that's the standard one. I have no idea.
It was totally non-standard because it stopped you on any letter you got wrong until you fix it. Yeah. You can't blow through your mistakes and then be penalized by the mistakes.
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.
All right, number two on the owners and the NFL on the march. The NFL referees are being backed into a corner. They're going to be snapped into like a Slim Jim at this point. I hate it. I hate it because what recourse do they have? The owners figured out two things. They're like, okay, we'll just be able to fix future Fail Marys, like the disaster that ended the lockout last time in New York. And we're going to hire the replacement refs now in May. And good luck, NFL refs. So that's unsettling to me. They have reopened the rights to their television deal with CBS because of the Paramount sale. And they're going to make a lot more money. And as soon as they get 50% more on that, they're going to turn around to their other partners and go, hey, knock, knock, price of business is going up. Then they're packaging a new group of standalone games. They've decided to forgo the Monday night doubleheaders that have been a thing. And I think that's smart, because I never really liked the Monday night doubleheader. And they're like, we're going to take those games away. We're going to bundle them into a 5-game standalone package on the shoulders of traditional holidays, Thanksgiving, Halloween, Christmas, New Year's, whatever. And they're going to sell them to streamers. And then they actually change the definition of what is considered a short week by saying, well, if we play on a Friday, which we really don't have historically Friday games, but you know we're gonna. Guess what? That's a full week. Suck it up. Man.
Also, this league. Another mistake by the NFL from an intangible standpoint is competing with Friday night high school football. High school is your feeder. It's your feeder program. They don't care.
No.
They don't. They just want money now. but they shouldn't be doing anything that takes away from high school football. You should not ask Cowboys fans who love high school football. High school football in Texas is gigantic. It's incredibly important. They shouldn't be doing anything that hurts college or high school football, but the NFL don't care. They're just about getting money now.
Yeah.
That is a huge mistake.
Reminds me of the old joke about the young bull and the old bull sitting at the top of a hill looking down at 100 or so cows grazing below. The young bull says, let's run down there and fuck one of them. The old bull says, no, let's walk down and fuck them all. The NFL is the old bull, and they are walking right down that hill to fuck them all. And then there's
on the ref.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on. On the referees. Can we jump back to
let's
there?
Let's jump for back a second. To the referees.
Thank you. Against what you would think would be the case, the referees do not want to be full-time refs. The union is fighting.
Yes.
The NFL wants them to be full-time refs. The union's fighting to let them not be full-time refs. And I think most listeners would think it would be flipped over from that. The refs all want to keep their other jobs and their other income because refing, there is a lot to refing. I've interviewed Bernie Kukar.
Oh, I remember Kukar.
Bernie Kukar. He's from Minneapolis. So I've interviewed him many, many times, and we've talked about this a lot. There is a lot of work that goes pre and post game for these referees,
mm-hmm.
but they all got other jobs, and they want to keep their other jobs and their other income. Because
guys like Hockley was a very successful, I think, trial attorney. So Hockley, even if he was making $300 a year from the NFL, was probably making $500 or more a year being a lawyer.
Right, right. And I think that's the case for a lot of these people. By the time you get to be an NFL ref, you're in your 40s typically because you've had to work your way up. You started by reffing at the bantam level, and then you got into a high school level, then you got a college level, and eventually you get to the NFL. And by that time, you got a whole other career going because you weren't making any money reffing. So you got this whole other career that's happening. And then all of a sudden you're supposed to abandon that career to become a ref in the NFL, and then they might fire you like they just fired the first female ref this week.
I did see that, and of course she is claiming workplace discrimination and harassment because she's a woman. This is so predictable. You know, maybe she's right. Maybe there was some of that. She also could have just sucked as a referee, which many men suck as referees. Many men suck as umpires. Oh, by the way, I know we don't talk baseball, you and I, because even though you're baseball positive, you're not a huge baseball guy. CB Buckner last night blew one of the worst calls ever in baseball, overturned by replay, where he said that a runner for the Brewers did not touch first base when, in fact, he put his foot clomp right in the middle of first base running out of ground ball. It had to be overturned by replay. People were tagging me left and right going, see, Zabe, this is why we need replay. In your world, this call would have stood. And I'm like,
yeah.
Well, and life would have gone on, but it was a horrible call. Buckner wasn't even looking at the bag. You could see it from the replays. This is, I think, because he was so rattled by how many times he got overturned by ABS in the first weekend. I think it's fucked him up in the field. And today, behind the plate, a foul tip creamed him. Right in the mask, and he had to leave the game. I said on Twitter just minutes ago, I go, wow, the baseball gods are giving old CB the full Job treatment, like from the Bible. It is pouring on this guy right now. He won't make it to September. But here, let's play a game. I'm gonna list some NFL refs. You guess what they do for a living.
For a living, okay.
Yes. Brad Allen, who is your doppelganger.
I get this all the time, especially before I had the beard. It's going to be white collar because he's not built.
He's a nonprofit CEO. Jug-eared Cleet Blakeman, attorney. Carl Cheffers, sales manager. Land Clark, chief building official. Alan Eck, tax manager.
Adrian Hill, aerospace software engineer. Smart guy.
What? Wow.
Sean Hockley, financial advisor. Oh, yeah. Sell 50 shares of BlackRock now. John Hussey, you Hussey, nonprofit founder and CEO. Sean Smith, manager at a medical insurance firm. So these are guys, look, it's dumb to make them full-time. There's nothing to do right now. There's only so many games you can watch film and go, oh, probably should have called a holding on that. Today is Wednesday, April 1st. Then there's Thursday the 2nd and Friday the 3rd. And then it's May. And then it's June. And then it's July. I mean, there's nothing to fucking do. It's a part-time job. They had to referee as a part-time job hustling on the way up. I know one of these guys, Ron Taylor. Shout out to you, Ronnie boy. MEAC referee. That guy has put in his time at the lower levels. He realized at some point the dream of making the show was not going to happen. He just couldn't travel anymore. But he reffed with guys. He once reffed with the great Jerome Boger. Love Jerome Boger. Missed Jerome Boger. The ladies,
how many refs do you think the NFL has in its employ at any one time?
Currently?
Well, at any one time. So,
contract? Like, how many referees do they contract with by way of the union?
Yes, for a given NFL season.
Well, every weekend. Let's see, there's 16 games, full max. You need 7 guys per crew plus a couple alternates. So that's 16 times 9. Where's my grok machine on that one? And then you got to add some administrators 96. As well.
Yep. Okay. Somebody's got the sniffles.
Okay. 144. 16 by 9 is 144 guys. Probably close to 150.
According to AI, they have 119 officials plus alternates under contract.
Okay, that's a leaner crew for a season. Right there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, a little bit, but that's a lot. So where the point of that is, if they're making if they're averaging, do we think $300,000? Do you know that number?
That number has been leaked that they average $300,000.
That's $36 million. Now $36 million. I mean, okay, granted, we're talking about like a $4 billion a year enterprise, and $36 million is not that much in that
not
scale.
Not that much. But it's couch cushions money. It's yeah, nothing.
But keep in mind that's not all. That is not all profit. That's that's $4 billion in worth revenue. So it's still a lot of money. It's a big commitment. But the refs are ultimately
It takes stadium ops guys to open the buildings, and ushers and concessionaires. Yeah. It takes a lot of people to put on these games every week. Extra overtime for police and whatnot. Emergency services. I mean, of all the places to scrimp, not on the fucking refs, not on the guys who we know are good. They're really good, these guys, all of them. There's a few clunkers in there, but they've kind of weeded those guys out,
And gals.
And gals.
Right? Or gal.
Or a gal. Well, they still have, I think, 2 female refs. And I guess they rate okay. Look, if the ladies rate okay, that's fine. And we don't need women refs, but the NFL decided that they did.
So. All we want are great refs. We don't care if they're men or women. We just want them to be there on merit because they're good at their job.
Right. The ball doesn't know if you've got ovaries or balls. It doesn't know. It doesn't care. Just make the right
call. Chains know for the first down when they're extending the chain?
The chains used to know, charge, and then they got rid of the chains because of the electronic system, which shockingly is always rarely used, that they actually say, oh, let's take an electronic measurement.
Yes.
Yeah, because they realized we're just going to basically go, yeah, first down, or no, not quite. The chains were a needless, intrusive slowdown. You remember growing up when you would see chain measurements that were like a foot short, and you would ask yourself, you couldn't see that from the sideline?
Right.
Also, did you know that referees, when a guy got a first down, he runs for 15 yards, they spot the ball at the nose tip on the nearest yard line. So it's a lot easier to know if he got the 10 yards, because all he has to do is put the nose across the same yard line 10 yards down. They used to be real literal. Like, this is at the 46 and a half. Now they're spotting it not on the halves.
To the nearest yard.
Yeah. They're rounding up like change.
What the hell? Why?
What do you mean, what the hell? On a first down, does it matter if they round up or round down?
No. Okay. I'm sorry. I missed the nuance of that. Yeah. Yes. On a first down, I don't really care.
Yeah. When they set a new first down in order to have a cleaner, easier way to measure, they round up or round down, sort of like a jar of pennies at the checkout. Take a penny, leave a penny.
Yeah. Kind of. For first downs, don't care. Obviously, if it's a different down, I care a lot more. Yeah. That makes sense.
All right. And then there's this Frank Ragnow situation. The Lions center, Frank Ragnow, announced his retirement after a long litany of horrible injuries, including, I couldn't even believe this when I read it, a fractured throat.
Oh, ow. What the hell? That's a thing?
That's apparently a thing. He had had enough football. He was falling apart, and he retires. That's when the Detroit Lions, the losingest franchise in NFL history, never been to a Super Bowl, says, about that signing bonus. Looks like you're going to owe us a prorated portion of it, Mr. Ragnow, because you did not finish the term of your contract. Are they right to do so? The Lions got chesty in a statement saying, this has been a longstanding policy with the club, and even bragged about how they clawed money back from Barry fucking Sanders back in the day. Where do you stand?
This is ultra thorny. First, Ragnow could have, it was absolutely within his right to show up for training camp, still be injured, not play basically all year, go on IR and get paid. You know, that he could have done that. Also, Ragnow, notorious for playing through all the injuries that you listed through, stuff that normal humans would never have played through. Here's the problem. If the Lions set precedent. Now, when you keep in mind, the signing bonus gets paid all up front. So if you sign a five-year deal for, I don't know, 50 round numbers here, for and the signing bonus is $50 million, in the cap hit is $10 million, but the player gets all 50 up front because it's the signing bonus. You just signed the contract.
Yeah.
So now the problem is Ragnow's not going to complete, 3 years on this deal? And so you don't want to set a precedent of letting guys keep it and then retire, because then future guys are going to be like, yeah, all right, well, I just got $28 million in my signing bonus. I don't have to play again. I don't have to give it back. I'm out.
That is true. And if it wasn't for the long list of injuries, I think people would be less sympathetic towards Ragnow. Yeah. What about a guy who has a single injury that just says, you know what? My knee's not right, and I've got all their money, and I never planned to play for 15 years in this league anyway, so peace, I'm out. That would be a problem. It's also why the NFL is never going to give guaranteed contracts. Never, ever, 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 ever.
Some people have got, Kirk Cousins had a fully guaranteed contract.
In general, they don't. Two of
in
them.
In general, they don't.
Kirk got that one, and then Deshaun Watson got that one.
Right. And that ended for everybody.
That pretty much ruined it for everybody, yes.
Deshaun Watson might just be your Cleveland Browns starting quarterback.
I saw that note from, I think, the new Browns head coach, Todd Monken, and it was not greeted well. It was from the owners' meetings, I believe, out there in Phoenix, where he missed the coach's photo because he was getting a haircut. <It's> so funny.
Wait, he was getting the haircut for the photo?
He was getting the haircut for the photo, and he missed the photo. Ba-dum-bum, ba-dum-bum. Browns fans are like, can you please just go 5 minutes without embarrassing me as a fan, please? So Ragnow, 2025, grade 3 hamstring strain. He attempted to return from retirement, but a physical revealed this severe tear, ending his comeback. In June of 25, he retired due to chronic compounding injuries, severe ongoing foot and toe issues that could only be addressed after football. In 2023, he played through a partial pectoral tear and dealt with knee, back, and ankle injuries. And in 2021, 2022, he had turf toe, a groin, a calf, and that infamous fractured throat.
Oh.
Fuck, oh my God. My throat is fracker.
I've never heard of a fractured throat.
Neither have I.
We've seen every sports injury I think you can possibly have. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard of or seen fractured throat.
All right. Did you get got today on any April Fool's jokes?
Not to the best of my knowledge yet, but I haven't been in a very gotcha-able position.
You haven't checked a lot of stupid social media?
How about you?
I got, and you saw it because you were on the Whiskey League chat, or at least you should have seen it if you've checked it.
I haven't.
Okay. So Buffalo Trace Distillery announced today they're releasing a limited edition Pappy Van Winkle Family Reserve blended with Coca-Cola in a can. For the ultimate ready-to-drink cocktail. I saw it and forwarded it saying, see, as someone like myself who has been chastised for mixing high-end bourbon into soda, this should trigger the fuck out of you, LOL. And that's when Gitter says, what's the date today, Steven? And I'm like, shit, I'll take a lap. I said, I'll take a lap. Whenever somebody posts fake news on the group chat, I go, take a lap. Like a coach, like in the movie Woodcock. Take a lap. That was a fake news right there. I got for it. Pappy Van Winkle, for those that don't know, is one of the most revered and rare and expensive bottles of whiskey, right? To mix it with Coca-Cola, even fresh, would be an offense. Great offense to whiskey.
Yes, it would be.
But
yes,
to use any of the existing stock to then pour it into a can with Coke. All right, so the greatest April Fool's prank that wasn't on April Fool's. Tell me you're aware of the Derek Bell, Joe Carter prank with the Blue Jays.
Remember Joe Carter, of course. Obviously great, longtime Blue Jay, but I don't think I remember this prank. Tell me about it.
It happened in October. Okay, I'm just going to go Derek Bell prank. It's legendary. 1992, it's a late season game. And during a promotional giveaway, Joe Carter and Dave Winfield conspired to get the keys to Derek Bell's custom tricked out whip, his beloved green Jeep. During the game, Carter drove the Jeep onto the field as the PA announcer said that a specific fan sitting in a specific seat had won this car in a raffle. And when you see the video of this and you see Derek Bell's face, you will just die. I want to get one that is not a Facebook post because they...
Welcome to MLB's video...
Okay, welcome to Video Vault. All right, I'm going to share it for you right now so you can see it. You had never heard of this, huh, Church?
No, this is a great get, though. This is fantastic.
It was just so good because of the fact that, like, Derek Bell was, like, legitimately thinking, like, hey, wait a minute. You're giving away my car? Okay, here you go, okay?
The library in Secaucus, New Jersey.
I had just came back in from center field, and they say, and today, you know, the giveaway, we're going to give away Derek Bell's truck.
Ladies and gentlemen, as part of my appreciation,
and I turn around and I see my truck.
You can't fake that face, George. Look at that face. He's like, oh shit, what?
I run to the field. I'm like, what the? You know, I'm like, what is going on?
I mean, if you can just zoom in and see his face and just let it hold there for a while, that tells the whole story.
Joe Carter was the guy driving the truck. He's best remembered as the last guy to end a World Series on a walk-off homer.
I mean, the walk-off homer is great. I think the prank might actually be even better.
That's outstanding. I love that story. I did an on-air prank once. I don't know if you've ever done any, but, you know, you're trying to fill segments.
Sure.
I got Minnesota Vikings center Matt Burke to go along and be my co-conspirator on this and went on the air. And we're just talking about, you know, we're talking about football and stuff. And then we slip in, he explains that this is when that brief moment in time when Brock Lesnar was a Minnesota Viking and that he had been wrestling with Brock Lesnar and had broken Brock Lesnar's leg, wrestling, and that this was, he was just, you know, it had just happened moments ago, and it had just come up in the middle of our interview. And so that was our prank that we did on the air.
That's good.
And it was not bad. It was not bad. I got a pro player to go in on an April Fool's prank, yeah. And Matt Burke was a cool guy. Yeah.
Hey, with fantasy coming up, I know it's going to be a long time, but with it coming up, can we resolve, you and I, to doing more pop culture resets, snarky resets in our analysis of who we like on any given week? Because the gods have given us a juicy one, saying, I expect a bigger day from insert fantasy player here than Brian Gnome strap-ons while alone in front of the internet on a Friday night. Holy shit, what a story that is. Wow.
I she claims she did not know, and maybe she did not know. But see, okay, when I saw the story, the first thing I thought of was she already lost her job, but she would have to lose her job now because you can be blackmailed.
Well, this
is blackmail material.
I think this was already known. I think this is why Trump canned her.
Have been why he canned her. That's what I was going to get to, is if she, you can't be in office like that because now somebody can own you. And I wonder how many of our politicians today have got something just like this that they are being actively extorted for.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And yet, if you decide that you are not a man, but you're actually a woman and you go through the process, you are celebrated and you're lauded. And you are held up and esteemed, especially by the other party, by the Democrats. But if you just like putting on fake boobs and having funsies on your own time, that makes you what? A bad guy? A weirdo? I don't know, man.
I guess.
Whatever. Hey, whatever gets you going. But some shit, probably try to keep that more private than possible. So.
Well, you know.
Oh, well.
This is a victimless situation, except for reputation.
Reputationally victim, yes, exactly. Which is why I always say, look, those midget photos of me, they are complete deep fakes. Like, those are so... and the one that's in the little sombrero from Tijuana, I don't even know that person. Like,
if anybody knows you, you don't do your midget group sex in odd numbers.
Thank you. I don't want one of the little persons to be left out. I'm considerate in that regard.
Very thoughtful.
I make it nice even. Everyone's got some fun to be had. All right, Church, you're the best, buddy. What's next for you as springtime springs in the hot Southwest, the high desert Southwest of Southwest Utah?
I am prepping for Vikings draft. I'm going to go back to Minnesota to be part of the Vikings draft party at US Bank Stadium. I've been doing it for 20 years.
It's wonderful they're having you back.
And Paul Allen. Yeah, it's nice that they're having me back, even though I'm gone, which is great. And I am, I'm getting prepped up on Vikings draft and who they should take. And man, do they have a lot of team needs.
All right, good. It might even be above 50 degrees by the time you get back there in late April. Might.
We'll see. I hope so. They're playing ball. You know, they start playing outdoors, Twins baseball, oftentimes first week of April. They're outside trying to play ball.
Well, ridiculous. When people ask me, like, why did they build that stadium outdoors? And the answer from you and others was, hey, man, in Minnesota, when the summer finally comes, the last fucking place you want to be is indoors. Because you know you've got nine months of indoors coming. So fuck it. We'll take the cold in April and late September and October if necessary. We've got to be outside. So that's why you built it that way. Good for you guys.
Exactly. Oh, one last thing on the Twins while we're talking. I'm trying to remember who released the poll. The Athletic released a poll just asking, are you every baseball fan base, are you optimistic about this season? Very simple question. Number one, Dodgers fans, 99.8 said they were optimistic about this season. Dead in the middle, the Braves, 72% said they were optimistic about this season.
Twins
fans, dead last, 4.3% of Twins fans said they were optimistic about their team.
Oh, the humanity. Sorry to hear that, my friend. I just want to know what 0.2% of idiots who purport to be Dodger fans are not optimistic.
Not optimistic.
Right? Why? Why would what happened that would make you less optimistic? What the fuck are you talking about?
Right. Your payroll is $400 million.
Like, yeah. All that survey did was prove that 0.2% of Dodger fans don't understand the meaning of the word optimist.
Right.
Church, as always, you're the best, my friend. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening and downloading, everybody. Tell a friend, rate and review, and we will see you next time.
Saying, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
Okay, so good day. Our topic today is music. That's right, like, because my brother and I are now experts in...
Just because the NFL season is now firmly in the rearview mirror does not mean the betting season is over. There is still plenty of opportunities to put a little something-something on the games. No matter what tickles your fancy, there is still plenty of action to whet your appetite. But just remember, where you bet is every bit as important, if not more so, than what you're betting on. That's why I tell my friends to go to mybookie.ag. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does that matter? Oh, I don't know, in a million ways. Better lines. Better payouts, less rules. At mybookie.ag, use promo code ZABE and have your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. Bet, win, and most importantly, get paid with MyBookie today.